You're cutting out. Can you repeat that? Go for production. Go for production. I said go for production. Production.
That's right. You're listening to a podcast about TV and film production. Join us as we converse with industry leaders and gain insight into their strategies, their systems, and best practices in bringing a script to life. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your host, Brendan Riley.
Welcome to another episode of Go For Production, where it's my job to deconstruct and demystify the production process in both film and television. We'll talk about strategies, systems, and tools the pros use so you can be inspired to move forward in your filmmaking career. Today's guest is Matt Compton. Matt has been working as a producer and production manager in film and television for over 20 years. He began his career with the independent feature film Dreamers in 1999, and from there, Matt has served as either producer or production manager on many other features, including Slip Dream, Callback, The Hillside, Strangler, Altered, Seventh Moon, and Midnight Sun. In addition to features, Matt has also worked on various promos and commercials. His promos include spots for Disney Channel, Disney XD, Toon Disney, Playboy, and Animal Planet. He's also produced two public service announcements for the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's Disease Foundation. For television, Matt has produced the specials The Burkittsville 7 for Showtime, The BPRD Declassified for Sony TV FX, and Disney Channel's Cast Party, Andy Mack, for Disney Channel. Recently, Matt developed a budget and actualizing app for short-form production called True Budget. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks for having me.
That is quite an interesting bio. You have done lots of different things over the years.
I have. Yeah, it's been a varied career so far.
So talk about, where did you get started? What got you brought into this filmmaking journey?
I knew from a pretty young age that I wanted to work in the business. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. At first, I thought I wanted to be a director, and then I learned that that wasn't really for me. But, I mean, from when I was a teenager or maybe even younger, I knew I wanted to work in the business. So, you know, as a kid, I played around with shooting little things on VHS tape and even some stop motion stuff on Super 8. And then went to college at University of Central Florida, and was trying to get into the film school there, but did not get in on my first attempt. So I decided rather than stay in school another year, I would get my degree in radio television. And so I did that. And then just immediately after I graduated, tried to get work as a PA on, you know, whatever was happening in Orlando. Mostly it was like corporate videos, that sort of thing. And then I moved here to LA in 1997 and just started trying to get work as a PA on anything I could, you know, sending out my resume to whatever, basically any show that I knew about. I would fax, this is back before, you know, email was really a thing.
Right.
So I would fax my resume to, every Tuesday back then, the Hollywood Reporter had a listing in the back of all of the shows that were either in pre-production or production. And so I would just fax my resume to basically every production office.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, try to get a call. And, you know, I got a couple of jobs from that, and that sort of got me started.
The good old fax machine.
That's right.
That's how you got started. It still cracks me up today when I hear somebody, can you fax that purchase order over to us? And I'm like, I can't email it to you?
I know. It's like, wait, people are still using faxes? What?
They still are. But do you ever use that program, like you can fax online for free and you can do like three of them?
I used to actually pay for that. There was a service called, I don't know, eFax or something. And I used to have a fax number just for that. But luckily, I was able to get rid of it a few years ago.
It's like, it's 2019. Maybe we should stop faxing.
Yeah.
So you're doing this PA work. You've been to school. You studied radio, TV. At what point did you think that production was for you?
I think pretty early on. So I was working mostly as an office PA. I worked as an office PA on a little Disney movie called The Wonderful Ice Cream Suit. And
wait, you worked on a Disney movie, like one of your first things, yeah. And now you're like doing Disney spots?
I know, right?
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
You can't get away from it, can you?
Disney does a lot of stuff, employs a lot of people. I just got this job. I think it was through faxing a resume to the production office, and they needed an office PA. It was weird. I started the very first day of the shoot, so I wasn't there for any of the prep. Mm-hmm. I guess something had happened to one of their office PAs, and he couldn't stay on. So it was the very first day of the shoot, and they called me the day before, and I started, and I was on that for about 6 or 8 weeks, and it was, you know, great experience. I learned so much about how a real show operated, at least from the office side. I didn't get to be on set very much, but I still, you know, still learned a lot just from being in the office every day. I worked on, a couple other jobs as an office PA after that. And then a friend of mine was making an independent film. I think the budget was about $200,000. And she asked me if I would come on and essentially be the production coordinator. And so I did that, took a pay cut from being a PA. I think I was making $100 a day as a PA. And I think I was making maybe 75 a day or something, you know, as the coordinator.
With a lot more responsibility.
With a lot more responsibility, you know, with not a lot of help. I think we had a couple of interns as PAs, but we couldn't afford to actually pay anyone to be an office PA. But I did that, and, you know, it was just sort of dumb luck. You know, I happened to have this friend who was making this feature, and she asked me to come work on it, and so I did, and that job led, I think, to another coordinating job, and then that next job, I think, was a production manager or even producing job. So I got very lucky in that I didn't have to work as a PA for a terribly long time. I know that's not typically how it goes. So I recognize how lucky I am that I kind of got to move up quickly. But yeah, I loved production, and so I recognized pretty early on that I found my niche.
So over the years, you've been line producing, working as a UPM on movies and commercials and promos. You know, I'm curious what the differences are for you when you're approaching this short format media. You know, when you have a promo for Disney, or you have, you know, a spot that you're producing. What are the challenges that you face that you don't ever run into on a feature or a series?
I think that mostly it's just time and sometimes budget. But usually on a short form project like a commercial or a promo, you don't have a whole lot of prep time. You know, you might have, depending on the complexity of the job, you could have anywhere from 3 to 7 days of prep. And so it's not usually a lot of time. You know, on a feature, you'll have, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks, depending on how, you know, the budget of the film and
right.
How complex it is. So time is a big factor. You usually don't have quite as much manpower to, you know, get the show up and going. Like if I'm on a job as the line producer, a short form job, I'm often also the production manager. And then hopefully the budget is big enough where I can have a coordinator, you know, mm-hmm. where I can hire a coordinator. But I've done jobs where I haven't had the budget and I've had to do that myself as well.
Right.
So sometimes it's a manpower issue if you don't have the budget to hire all the people you'd like to have. I'd say those are probably the two biggest challenges. Well, and now I should add, I guess, that at least on the promo side, it seems like the last couple of years, budgets have really been cut, especially for cable TV promos. I'm sure, you know, most of your listeners probably know a lot of people are cutting the cord, so not as many people have cable as they used to. And so the cable channels are cutting their promo budgets. I think, because they're losing revenue on not having as many subscribers as they used to.
Right.
So that's been a challenge in the last couple of years, is just trying to deliver the same kind of a shoot for the client and for the production company with sometimes drastically less money, sometimes moderately less money, but still less money. You know, they want the same, but they're not paying quite as much as they used to. So that definitely has its challenges.
So they've been spoiled all these years, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a shift that has happened in the business because of, you know, eyeballs shifting, and, you know, so many people now are watching things streaming and less on normal cable TV. And so just trying to do more, or at least the same, for less money, you know, depending on, so much of it, as you know, comes down to the creative, right? The script dictates the cost of the job. And so when your creative people understand that budget is being constrained and they write to that, you know, it's going to be less of a challenge than if they write something that would normally have cost, you know, $200,000, but the client wants it for $100,000.
When you're dealing with these promos and spots, a lot of times they're for a client like Disney. What are some of the things that you have to take into account in terms of your communication? Like, you have to go through lots of different departments to get approval, and does that slow things down?
It can. I think it kind of depends on the job. Usually I have a point person on the production side of things, and they're approving the budget, first of all. And then once the budget is approved, sometimes I have to get lots of approvals for things like casting or wardrobe or set design. It just kind of depends on the scope of the job. That just dictates what the client is expecting.
Mm-hmm.
It can be challenging a lot of times when you don't have enough time. You know, you don't have enough time to really prep it as much as you would like. So when you're trying to scramble and pull something together really fast, when you now have to get approvals on all of these things, and if the client is not quick to give you those approvals, yeah, that can be a real challenge. At the end of the day, you know, they know the shoot date is whatever date it is, and so they're usually pretty good about giving approval, but you know, like everybody these days, they're busy. They have lots of other projects going on at the same time. So yeah, sometimes it's a challenge to you know, get that answer out of them in time to make it happen.
Is there any trick that you have discovered over the years to get those answers quicker than others, like without bugging them incessantly?
I mean, you just, you know, you give them a deadline. You just tell them when you ask, like, okay, here's the sketch for the set, or here's the casting choices. You just tell them, I need an answer by this date. And, you know, maybe you tell them a little bit earlier than you really need that answer.
Some cushion.
Just give yourself a little bit of cushion so they, in case they're late, you're still going to be okay. But usually, you know, once you give the client a deadline, they're usually pretty good about getting back to you. If you don't give them a deadline, then you could find yourself in some trouble.
Do you have to follow up before the deadline?
It depends. If I'm working with somebody who, you know, I've worked with in the past, if it's a client I've worked with before, and we have, you know, there's a trust between us, I don't usually reach out beforehand because I know from past experience they're going to get back to me, or at least I think they are going to get back to me. If it's a client I haven't worked with before and the communication up to that point hasn't been as great as I would like, then yeah, I might follow up and at least go, hey, I just want to confirm you got my email with the casting selects or whatever it is.
Right. You know, I think this whole idea of, you know, managing your email is something that you really have to learn when you get into production, because I don't know about you, but when I start a production, the amount of emails just increases like 100-fold.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I'll get sometimes 100 emails a day when I'm on a job. And so, yeah, you just have to be sitting in front of your computer pretty much all day long and answer them as quick as they come in.
Well, there's sometimes that you know it's going to slow you down to answer certain emails. So do you ever, you have a system or anything, or do you, like sometimes I flag an email or...
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sometimes I'll flag an email, especially if I don't have an answer yet.
Yeah.
You know, I'll flag it and go, okay, I got to come back to that in a few hours when hopefully I've gotten that answer.
Right.
But I at least try to reply very quickly and say, so just to let that person know, I've received the email. I'm researching the answer. I hope to have something by the end of the day, for instance.
Yeah.
Just so the other person isn't out there going, well, did Matt get my email? And
right.
If he did, like, what's going on? Why isn't he writing back? So I try to do that, but you're right. You know, when you're getting 100 emails a day, it becomes hard to reply to every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's sometimes a culture of, you know, not everybody's on the same page in terms of their philosophy about email etiquette, like you're saying.
Yep.
Like, it's great. I love it when somebody replies back and say, got it, I'll get back to you,
yep.
Versus like, did they even get it? Did it go to their spam?
Exactly.
I don't know. Like, do they hate me now? Like,
right. And because I've had that happen a couple of times where emails I've sent did go to people's spam folder.
Right.
And I've been sitting there waiting for an answer.
Yeah.
Right. And finally, I think I, you know, either I sent another email or I called and they go, oh, no, I never got your email. And it turned out it went to their spam. So, yeah, I feel like whenever you can, especially on a job where there's a quick turnaround, like a promo or a commercial, it's always good to shoot a reply, especially if it's the client, right, or mm-hmm. the agency or somebody. Shoot a quick reply and say, I'm on it, I'll get back to you, you know, I'm hoping to hear something in a few hours, just so at least they know you're on it.
I think the other thing I've learned, I don't know about you, is making sure I'm taking advantage of the carbon copy and blind carbon copy when I need to.
Oh, yes.
And making sure the right person gets copied. And if they don't get copied, that could be a problem later on. And
for sure, yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's always at the beginning of a job. Okay, who needs to be copied on what emails? You know, who needs the production report? Because, you know, that one person's going to get left off and, you know, it's not going to be good.
I've run into this doing projects for Disney. I've worked on Disney projects for a long time, I think maybe 2000 was the first year I did something for one of the Disney cable channels. And so I know a lot of the folks over there. I've known some of them for many, many years. And I know how many emails they get every day. And it's a lot. I mean, it's more than I get because they're involved with so many different things and getting emails from getting CC'd on all these emails from all these different departments. So I try to be cognizant of that and not CC the Disney folks on every email. But, you know, then there's that one email that I don't CC somebody on that turns out to become a problem later on. And then they're calling me going, well, why didn't you CC me on that?
Right.
So
it's like you're trying to, you know, not bother them,
exactly.
But they almost want to be bothered.
Right. So it sometimes can be a tough line to walk. I think I've gotten pretty good at it after so many years, but like I said, you know, you never know what's going to become a problem until it's a problem. And then if you haven't CC'd that person on the email chain already, well, now you're getting them on it later and they might get upset. But normally, you know, I think people understand that I'm trying not to inundate them with 50 emails a day.
Right. I think one thing that I've been thinking about recently is really trying to distinguish between what qualifies an email versus a text, versus a Slack, versus, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, you might want to use a program like Slack to send messages so you're not bombarding people with emails.
Right.
And other times the email is what you need because of the attachments or whatever. But I just think it's interesting that we have so many different ways to communicate now.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I try to do as much in email as I can because, well, when I like the written record, I know you have a written record in, you know, text and Slack, but I also like, because it's just easier for me. I guess I'm a little, you know, I'm old school in that way, but it's just email is easier for me. And then, of course, it's easier to CC people on an email than say on a text. But yeah, you know, I think texting is so prevalent now that, you know, people will be texting me during a job, during prep. And that's okay, but I hate typing on my phone.
Yeah.
And so I'd so much rather it be on an email. But, you know, especially for people who are, you know, who are out in the field, you know, if I've got a prop master who's out shopping, well, it's probably way easier for him to text me than it is to write an email. So I'm going to get emails from him and just have to communicate that way. And then if I ever have to reference it, I just have to go back to my phone and look at the text.
Yeah, you have a PA doing a pickup, you know, right. And like, hey, I'm leaving this
place. That kind of stuff, you know, totally fine with text. Anything of more substance, I just like to do it over email because, like I said, one, it's easier for me. But then it feels a little more official. And I don't know if I feel that way just because I'm, you know, I'm 47 years old, so I'm... You know, I guess I'm a little old school, like I said, but I prefer email. Then it's easier to forward things. You know, if you get something and you need to send it on other people, it's just easier to do it from one email.
Do you use a certain email program?
I use Microsoft Outlook because I am based on Windows. Mm-hmm. A lot of people in the short form world, you know, commercials and music videos and like, they're on Mac. But I'm on Windows, so I use Outlook. Because I've just been using it for years, and it's easy for me to find things and keep track of things. I like it better than like a web-based email. I know a lot of people do web-based, I think I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm just old school and been doing it with Outlook for so long that I like sticking to that.
I find that the web-based is never fast enough for me. It's like
interesting.
It feels like I can just start a new message quicker with an email client like the Mac Mail or Outlook.
I think that's probably true, yeah.
When it comes to, I know we're spending a long time about email, but I think it's an interesting topic because so much of our life really is, you know, centered around these emails.
Absolutely.
Is there anything that you try to do when you're crafting these emails, you know, in terms of their conciseness or...
Yeah, and I sometimes am not very good at that. I have discovered that my emails sometimes can be a little too long. It's just because, you know, I'm trying to get across, you're just trying to get across sometimes a lot of information. But I have learned that, you know, people don't want to read a long email. People want, you know, people want it in, you know, two or three sentences. So I do try to be as concise as I can, and I try now not to put too much information or ask too many questions in the same email, but, you know, sometimes you just can't avoid it. Otherwise, you're sending, you know, 10 emails to the same person rather than just one.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, generally speaking, because people are so busy these days and they don't want to spend a long time reading something... I try to be as concise as I can.
Yeah, and it's almost like if the email is going to be more than a paragraph, you might as well just attach a document, right?
Yeah, it's that's like... true. You could do that, yeah. You know, some people say, oh, why did you write all this? Why didn't you call? Just call me and talk to me about this. And, you know, sometimes a phone call is absolutely the best way to go, but I like having that written record,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're on the phone with somebody and, you know, you ask them the question, they give you an answer, and then... Later, if they go, oh, no, I never told you that. Well, you don't have any record that they told you that,
mm-hmm.
right? It's your memory versus theirs. And so I try to do as much as I can over email just because I do like to have that written record. And then sometimes it's not even that that there's a disagreement, you know, between you and them as far as what was said. Sometimes it's just, oh, I don't remember. I just need to go back and look at what they wrote to, you know, make sure I'm remembering properly. If it was done on a phone call, well, you don't have that option.
You know, recently I got an email and they had seven questions, and I answered all seven questions, but I said, let's also talk about this on the phone, because this question, this, these two questions, I, you know, I can't answer, yeah. You know, so, but I kind of, it's both and, right? So you have to.
Yeah. Some things are just too complex to do over email, right? It's just too complex to discuss. And I totally get that. But, if I'm ever concerned that, that there's not a written record of something that was discussed on the phone, sometimes I'll write an email to all the folks who were on the phone call and just say, hey, everybody, thanks for the call today. Just to recap, this is what we decided. And then that way, if there's any, if anybody, you know, has a different recollection of the call, they can chime in at that point. But at least I've covered myself and I've put it out there in writing. So if anyone comes back and says, no, I didn't say that, then I can say, well, you know, I sent out an email after the call and I laid out my understanding of it and you didn't respond. So, because like I said, people are so busy these days and sometimes people just don't remember, or there's just a different understanding, you know, during a phone call of what was decided. You know, one person thought, you know, we were going to do this and another person thought we were going to do that. And, I've had it happen several times. So yeah, I always like to have it in writing whenever I can.
I think it's very wise. And I've heard a similar phrase before. The phrase is, just to be clear, you know.
you have no idea how many times I've written that in an email, because that's exactly what I'm doing.
It's because, you know, like you said, it's not anybody's fault. They're just busy. They've got 1,000 emails, so they may have missed it.
Yep.
You know, and going back to your point earlier, sometimes if somebody doesn't reply to an email, they may have just forgot about your email. And true. And they may be absent-minded or just, you know, had a bad day.
Right, or busy on another project.
Yeah.
And by the time they have time to go back to your email, well, they have 50 other emails in their inbox now and they just completely forgot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I have been guilty of that on occasion. I try not to forget about anybody's email, but yeah, when you're getting 50 or 100 emails a day, you know, it happens every once in a while.
So you're doing this, you're in this production world, you're in this space doing, specializing in this short form, media. So you've been budgeting these shows for a long time. And then recently I saw that you, you know, launched a new program called True Budget. So talk about that. What is True Budget?
So True Budget is a budgeting tool, and an actualizing tool for short form productions mainly. So commercials, promos, music videos. But I think it could also be used for other things like short films, web series, maybe certain types of documentaries. It works within Microsoft Excel. So you have to have Excel in order to use it. I started working on it about 16 months ago. And the reason I did it was because the industry standard budgeting tool right now for short form doesn't work very well on Windows. It's primarily made for Mac because most people in the short form world are on Mac.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't use this particular piece of software because I've been on Windows my whole career. So I decided... let me see if I can write my own. I had written, I had created other spreadsheets in Excel where I had written code on them. And I'd been messing around with that for probably 10 years. So I thought, well, let me see if I can do this. So initially it was just something that was going to be for me.
Right.
And then after a couple of weeks of working on it, I thought, well, there must be other people like me out there who are on Windows who would want to use something like this. So maybe I'll, you know, if and when I get it done,
right,
I'll make it available. And then I went ahead and made it work for Mac as well, since I know so many people are on Mac. So so it works for both Windows and Mac. Like I said, it runs within Microsoft Excel, but it basically allows you to budget a production. And then actualize it, you know, once you're wrapping it. So tracking all of your costs, all of your purchase orders or essentially vendor invoices, all of your payroll and all of your petty cash.
For the person out there, maybe they're newer to this, maybe they're in film school. Can you explain the whole actualizing process? And is there a system that you've developed to make that easier?
So actualizing, all that really means is figuring out what your production really cost, mm-hmm. what it actually cost. The system that I use in True Budget is nothing new. Let me go back a little bit to the 1980s. There's an organization called the Association for Independent Commercial Producers, and they created a budget template that all commercials should use. And that became the standard for how to format a budget for commercials. And then it also became the standard for music videos and anything short form. Like, that was the standard. And in the 90s, there was a piece of software that also worked within Excel called Point Zero. And it used this format, and they added functionality for doing actualizing. So tracking all of your purchase orders or your invoices, all your payroll, all your petty cash. So True Budget is really kind of based on Point Zero. There's another piece of software, the one I said that doesn't really work on Windows very well. And it does the same thing. It's Excel based. It does the actualizing essentially the same way. So the general way that mine works for the actualizing is nothing new, but I have added a couple of things to it that are new, that I think will make it easier for people to actualize. So, for instance, in True Budget, you can create your own purchase orders right inside the software, so you no longer need to have a separate Excel document or Word document to create purchase orders. When you create a purchase order, once you save it, the information from the purchase order will be placed on the log for you. So you don't now have to go and enter it again on the log. It'll already be there. The same is true for when you do petty cash envelopes. Essentially, the petty cash cover sheet or the summary sheet is now inside True Budget. So you can input it all in True Budget. It'll appear on your log once you're finished with it. You can send a blank summary sheet to your crew, and they can fill it out and then email that back to you, and then you can import that directly into True Budget, so you don't have to re-enter all the information. So I think that'll make life a little bit easier for, you know, producers, production supervisors, coordinators when they're actualizing. At least I hope so.
Very cool. Have you had any feedback yet, or what's been the... Talk about the launch.
I just launched a few days ago, so I haven't gotten a lot of feedback, but I have gotten a little bit. And I'd say it's been, you know, pretty much all positive. I've gotten a few notes as far as, oh, well, maybe you could tweak this, you know, mm-hmm. change how this works a little bit. But by and large, people seem to like it. I haven't gotten any angry emails yet from people saying, you know, you know, you blew up my computer, or, you know, it crashed Excel. So that's a good sign. You know, usually, no news is good news is kind of that old saying. So the fact that I haven't gotten any angry emails, I think, is a good sign. But haven't heard from a lot of people yet, just because it's only basically been out there for less than a week. So, you know, hopefully in the coming days and weeks, I'll start hearing from more people. And I'm going to start following up with people, you know, especially the people that I know in the business, mm-hmm. And asking for feedback, because I do want to continue to update it. And I want to make changes based on ideas that I get from the production community.
How does somebody find True Budget?
They just go to truebudget.net.
Oh,
yeah.
Very
and
cool.
They can download it. I've made it free. So it's going to be free at least until the end of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be free for over a year. So they can try it out, no risk. And if they try it out, I'd love to hear from them. I'd love to hear what, you know, they like about it, what they don't like about it. What are some things that they wish that it did that it doesn't currently do?
And you're going to be releasing new versions, right?
Yeah. I definitely plan to release some new versions over the course of the next year. you know, some of it will be like any piece of software. I'm sure there'll be little minor bug fixes that have to be dealt with. But I do want to start incorporating some of the feedback I've already gotten. So hopefully, you know, within the next, you know, maybe 2 or 3 months, I'll have an update out there that also will be free.
That's very exciting.
Thank you.
I want to talk about, you know, we talked a little bit offline about, you know, what's next for you and your career. And, you know, we were both mentioning this idea of just sometimes the difficultiness of the production life, you know. And in your experience, do you think there are problems with the current pace of production work, you know?
Well, it is certainly, it certainly has long hours. And that's, it's not something that I love about it anymore, I'll be honest. I'm the kind of person that needs, you know, 8 hours of sleep at night. And I wish I wasn't. I wish I could get by on 5 or 6. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes when I'm on a production job, I have to get by on 5 or 6. But, you know, normally my body wants 8. And you don't get that a lot when you're on a job, when you're on a production job. I'm on set. Usually it can be anywhere from 12 to 15 hours a day. And that's, you know, that's brutal. That can be brutal, especially if it's a multi-day job.
And you're sometimes the first one there, last one to leave, right?
Yeah. Oftentimes both is true. You know, if it's a bigger job, sometimes like if I'm the first one there, I don't have to be the last one to leave, but especially on short form stuff. I'm sometimes the main contact for the production department, so I have to be there first, and usually I can't leave until everyone else is gone. So that just gets to be brutal. So I don't love the hours anymore. That's probably the biggest thing about a production work that I'm not liking anymore. I just don't love the long hours, but it comes with the job, you know. So to any of your listeners who are looking to get into production, that's something to be aware of. You know, something to know is that it's going to be long hours on set. And, you know, especially if you're on a movie or a television series where you're working months at a time and you're doing these brutal days, 5 days a week for months and months, it's rough, you know, especially if you have a family, if you have kids, you know, you're not getting to see them much. So, that's the probably the biggest complaint I have about how the business works is that just the hours are brutal.
Do you think that the system will ever change, or do you think it will be like that for a long time?
I mean, it's been that way for as long as I've been in the business, and I'm sure many decades before I got into the business. Mm-hmm. I think it will probably stay that way simply because production is so expensive that if they were to try to cap a shoot day at 8 hours, then, you know, the shoot would take that many more days. Mm-hmm. And so now you're renting all that equipment for many more days, and you're having to feed your crew for many more days because you're shooting for more. So I just think it's too expensive to try to do something like that. So I think, yeah, that'll continue to be the norm, you know, is 12 hours. They try not to go over 12 hours on a shoot because then you're into more overtime.
Right.
But I don't see it ever going below 12.
Unless you're like Clint Eastwood and you can do a 10-hour day.
Oh, right? Sure. Look, certain powerful directors can just say, I'm not going to shoot for more than X number of hours a day, and they can do that. If you're not one of those powerful directors, then, yeah, I think you're looking at at least 12 hours a day. And you know, there are some very powerful directors that will go over, partly because they want to make their day. You know, they don't want to fall behind schedule and have the studio upset with them, and they don't want to go over budget. And so, you know, if they don't make the day at the 12-hour mark, then they'll keep going and it'll be a 13 or a 14 or a 15 hour day. That's rough on the crew.
I was on a show. I won't say what show it was, but they plan on their first day of the week to always go over.
Really?
Because they know it's harder to do that toward the end of the week.
Oh, that's true.
Because of turnaround issues with the cast and stuff like that. But if they start super early on Monday, they can go a little bit later and start later on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think it's just... it's just the nature of the beast, and if you're going to work in production, you just, you know, you need to be very aware that that's how it's going to be.
I guess here's the question. You know you have these long hours. How do you sustain it in the long end? Have you found ways to, you know, rest or relax or, you know, recover from that?
Well, mostly what I do now is short form stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily those don't shoot for a lot of days. So, you know, like I know you and I have worked on stuff together where it's been like a 3-day shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so after 3 days, I go into wrap, and you know, wrap isn't 12 hours.
Right.
Wrap is, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours, depending on, you know, how stressful it is. So, you know, luckily it's not too bad in that I've only got to do, you know, usually between 1 and 5 days of shooting. And then I know I'm going to get a break where I'm going to get a little bit more sleep. And then, you know, wrap is usually anywhere from 3 to 6 days, depending on the complexity of the job.
Right.
And then the job's over. And if I don't have anything set up after that, then I can sleep as long as I want. So I'm lucky in that I don't have a lot. It's not like a movie or a television series where it's just every day, 5 days a week for months. So I haven't really developed a system because I just know that, okay, I just got to suffer through it and this shoot's going to be over in 3 days and then I'll be able to sleep again.
But on your day off, is there anything that you'd like to do to just not think about work? Are you coding more apps?
Well, for the past 16 months, that's kind of been what I've been doing. Yeah,
right.
It's like when on my days off, I've been trying to work on True Budget. Now that it's out there, I'm trying not to spend quite as much time in front of the computer. But no, honestly, like when a job is over, if I'm really beat, I just stay home. I rest, I sleep in, I, you know, watch some TV that I've missed, you know, find something good on Netflix or Amazon.
Right.
I just let myself rest because I'm usually beat.
You know, I was talking to a friend of mine. He was working on a TV series for many, many years, and he just got beat up doing it.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know, it just the hours and the culture that it created. So it can be, you know, a tough environment, you know.
Yeah, you have to really, really love it. Really love the work, I think, to want to go through that. And I did for a really long time, you know, like there was nothing cooler to me than being on set. After, you know, 22 years in the business, that's kind of worn off and it's not terribly exciting for me to be on set anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been on enough sets where, you know, that excitement just isn't there. But yeah, I think because the hours are so long, and then especially if you work on movies or television, you're doing it for months at a time. You just have to really love it. You have to, you know, you have to know that that's what it's going to be, and you just have to really love it.
What are some things that you've done when you're on a set just to get through the day? Is there anything? Is it a lot of coffee?
Not for me, because I don't drink coffee. So a lot of tea sometimes. I try not to do a lot of caffeine, but on some days on set, I have to go with the strongest tea that I can find at the craft service
What's
table.
The strongest tea? I don't even know.
Well, black tea.
Okay.
Any kind of black tea has got the most caffeine in it. I don't normally drink black tea for that reason, but yeah, there are some days on set I'm like, I need to go find me like a nice like English breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called PG Tips, I think is a pretty strong one. So sometimes I do that. There's not a lot of tricks that I have found. Other than, you know, if I'm in the production office a lot, I'll get up, I'll walk around the set, check on how things are going. I'll usually run into some crew member that needs to talk to me about something. So, you know, that'll distract me for a little while, and then maybe that'll give me something to do where I have to go and, you know, look something up or send a PA to a rental house to go pick something up or something. Yeah, it's funny when things are going well on set.
Yeah,
is when there's not a lot for me to do.
Right,
and those are the worst days in terms of getting terribly bored, because especially if there's no next day to prepare for. If it's a multi-day job, and I have tomorrow to worry about, well then I'm worried about approving the call sheet or whatever to make sure tomorrow is going to happen. But you know, if it's the last day of a job or if it's just a one-day job. You know, and things are going well. Well, there's not a lot for me to do, and that's what it gets.
Because
that's what it gets hard, because I'm sitting there for 12 hours or more with not a whole lot to do. There's only so much, you know, web surfing I want to do in a day.
Because all your hard work was done during prep,
right. Yeah, it's kind of an old saying, I think, with line producers and production managers, where if I'm bored on set, that's a good thing.
Right. Mm-hmm, right.
And yeah, it is a good thing because you want the production to go as smooth as it possibly can. But then it sucks for you on the day when you're on set and you don't have anything to do. And I try to get a jump on wrap sometimes, but there's only so much I can do until the shoot is over.
Right.
I can't start bugging my vendors for invoices because the gear hasn't gone back
yet. And they're like, why are you sending me an email?
Right. So, you know, I can't do the time cards yet because no one's turned them in yet. So, uh-huh. Yeah, there's not a whole lot to be done. So, yeah, sometimes it is, you know, you just hang out and surf the web and hang out in the office and wait for someone to come and ask you for something.
And you mentioned, you know, walking around, talking to different department heads. How often do you find yourself either in prep or on the shoot checking in with those department heads or personnel?
It kind of depends on the job. I don't tend to do a lot of that because, you know, I trust the folks that are on my crew, and mm-hmm. I know that if something is wrong, they're going to come let me know.
Right.
So I don't tend to check in a lot, but I'll go out on set, you know, 4 or 5 times during the day and just to make sure everything's going okay. I don't tend to, like, pull anybody aside and be like, hey, how's it going? You know, because I know, like I said, they're going to come find me if there's something wrong,
mm-hmm.
or they're going to call me on the walkie-talkie. But I like to go on just to check on it, just to... And in case somebody has a question for me and they can't leave the set to come to the office to find me, then I'm out there where they can see me. They can come over and go, oh, hey, Matt, you know, I have this question, or we need to go pick up this piece of gear. But like I said, I don't tend to do it too much because I know if something is wrong, somebody is going to either come to the office to get me or call me on the radio.
Do you ever find yourself hanging out at Village? Or wanting to, or not wanting to?
I don't tend to want to hang out at Video Village. I know some producers love to, but no, I don't like this. I don't know why. I just don't like to stay there very long. I think generally it's because, you know, I'm not there to weigh in on the show creatively, you know, whatever the shoot is.
Right.
Like, there are other people there that are giving their opinion, you know, creatively. The director and the writer and the agency and the client. And so, you know, for me to sit there all day long doesn't really make any sense. I would rather be in the office doing whatever I can to, you know, get rap started or whatever. But no, I don't tend to like to hang out at Video. I will go out there for a little while, and like I said, to make sure things are okay and let my presence be known in case somebody has a question. But otherwise, I just go back to the office usually.
I think it's interesting. I mean, when I'm on a movie or something, you know, sometimes people will expect, you know, me to be on set a lot,
mm-hmm.
but I have a lot of problems to figure out if I'm line producing a movie.
Absolutely.
That I've got calls to make. I've got to be at my computer. I've got to go run some errands. Yeah, I'd love to be on set, but I trust the director. I trust the first AD.
Right.
And it doesn't make sense for me to go hang out and babysit, you know, if they've got it covered.
Exactly. If you have a first AD that you trust, then they're running the set. You know, it's their set. Mm-hmm. And I'm not someone that likes to micromanage people. So unless it's like a first AD I've never worked with before, or just that I'm nervous about or have gotten a bad vibe from, I just let them do their thing. And like I said, I know that someone's gonna find me if there's a problem that needs to be dealt with.
Yeah.
So,
I will go back to, I guess what we're talking about is, you know, trying to know when to go to set. Like for me, I know I can look at the call sheet and be like, okay, this scene is complicated, or there's a stunt here, or okay, I'm closing off the road and I've got ambulances coming down the street. Probably should be on set for that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you're doing that kind of stuff, absolutely I'll be on set. Yeah. I don't tend to have to do that sort of thing in the promos, mm-hmm. and other short form stuff that I've worked on. But I absolutely agree. If you're doing a stunt, if you're doing, anything like that where you're closing off roads, like you said, or anything like that. Yeah, I absolutely am on set for mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Right. Is there anybody when you're going to set that you like to talk to? Like, do you ever talk to the producers or the director or...
I'll usually check in with, so if I'm on a promo, for instance,
right?
Whoever the producer is for the production company,
mm-hmm.
like the creative producer,
yeah.
for that production company, yeah, I'll check in with them to say, hey, how's it going? Sometimes that is also the director, and then usually the first AD, you know, especially if we're running behind. You know, if we're behind schedule, I'll check in with them and just be like, hey, you know, how are you feeling? Do you think we're going to be able to catch up? And, you know, sometimes it's yes and sometimes it's no. And that's just the nature of production, is sometimes you fall behind.
They're like, order second meal.
Yeah, exactly. That is sometimes why I go out to set, actually, is I'm like, so how are we doing? Because, yeah, if we're not going to wrap by this time, I need second meal.
Now, how do you gauge that? How do you know when you think it's behind versus what they think it's behind?
I mean, usually the first ADs I've been able to work with, you know, the last several years have been really experienced. So we're usually on the same page. Like mm-hmm. we can both usually tell,
right,
you know, if we're going to make the day or not, or if we're going to go over. So,
you're both saying, yeah, this director has way too many shots. Or
yeah,
something.
That, or, you know, we ran into some technical problem earlier in the day and it cost us a half an hour and, uh-huh. and we weren't able to make that up. And right. so now we're going to go over by the half an hour. Or, you know, the 50 other things that can go wrong,
right.
you know, on a set. So, but usually the first AD and I are on the same page. So we usually will, I will assess it about 3 hours before a second meal is due,
because mm-hmm.
you want to have time to call the restaurant and have them make the food and be able to get it there. So we'll usually decide about 3 hours before. And so just look at, okay, where are we? How much more do we have? Do we think we're going to be able to make up some time here in these last 3 hours? And then we pull the trigger on the meal. If we pull the trigger on the meal and then hope that the food doesn't all go to waste. But, you know, I've been on sets where, you know, we order a second meal and then we have wrapped on time.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, 75% of the food gets thrown away. Or the PA's taken home.
But if you didn't have it, and
exactly.
it'd be in a bad spot.
You know that if you didn't order the food, you wouldn't have wrapped early and then you would be, you know, you'd be hurting.
Very cool. So one of my questions I like to ask as we wrap this up is, do you have any gadgets, technology, or apps that you like to use when you're going into a production?
I mean, you know, honestly, like the biggest thing that I use, and it's not an app, it's a website,
I guess we could say that.
Oh, okay. Is the LA 411.
Okay, there you go.
You know, it's basically an online directory of companies and crew that, you know, are in the business. So whether you're looking for a camera rental house or a stage or, you know, a special effects company, you know, they're all there. And so if you need something and, you know, your normal vendor isn't available, you go to LA 411 and you're going to find it. And they have the same in New York. I think it's just New York 411. But yeah, that's kind of my go-to, website. If I need something, you know, normally I call the vendors that I know and have relationships with, and 99% of the time they can help me out. But, you know, that 1% of the time when they can't, it's good to have that directory where I can find something in, you know, a matter of seconds.
Do you use any technology to manage your task or goals, or do you paper pen guy?
You know what? It's almost paper pen. I keep a to-do list for every job in a Microsoft Word document.
Okay.
And I just, you know, as I finished a task, I just delete it. And then as I think of something else that I need to do, either that day or the next day or whenever, I just add it to the list. So I'm pretty old school when it comes to that. I think it's normally because the jobs are so quick that it's just easier to just type it in a Word document.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, it's fast. And then I just delete that line once I've done the task. But I'll also keep track of, and sometimes this is hard when you're sending out so many emails in a day, but I also try to keep track of who I'm waiting to hear back from on certain things.
Right.
Because, you know, if you've got 10 emails out to 10 different people where you're waiting to hear back from them about something, sometimes you forget, right? You forget, you know, oh yeah, I emailed that person this morning. I need to know about whatever the talent size is or something. And so I try to keep that on my list so that I can check that list periodically and be like, oh, that's right, that person never got back to me yesterday, and then I can follow up.
And there, I guess when you're following up, you don't want to, you know, follow up every hour. You want to like make sure that it's, you give them enough time to do their work, right?
Sure.
So how much time do you like to give people? Or I guess it depends.
It kind of depends on, you know, the specific thing. But, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, if they haven't acknowledged that they even got the email, then I might follow up, you know, even the same day.
Yeah.
You know, if it's been 5 or 6 hours and I haven't heard anything,
right,
I might follow up and be like, hey, I just want to make sure you got my email.
Right.
If they acknowledged it and but then I haven't heard from them for a day or two, then I'd probably just follow up and say, hey, just checking in on this.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, and sometimes you have to be careful when you send it, right? Like you don't want to send it Monday morning at 9 o'clock or it's definitely not going to get returned, right?
Yeah. And you especially have to be cognizant of that when you're writing the client or the agency. So sometimes I won't send an email, like, you know, if it's over the weekend, for instance, sometimes I won't send an email to the client or the agency on the weekend because I know that they'll probably see it on Saturday afternoon and go, okay, I got to get back to Matt on Monday.
And they'll forget.
Completely forget by Monday. So I won't send it. But, you know, if it's to a crew person,
right,
especially somebody that I know and have a relationship with, then sometimes I will send it on the weekend just because I know I'm going to be sending so many emails on Monday anyway. I want to knock out a couple of them on the weekend if I can.
Yeah, I try not to send emails on the weekend because I don't want people to have to work, because reading it is sometimes work.
That's true.
But it's like sometimes things are so urgent, you're starting on Monday or whatever, and you're like, you just have to know.
Right. And especially on these short form projects, the turnaround can be so fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could be starting on a Thursday and we could be shooting the next Tuesday. And so I sometimes have people working on the weekend, or even if they're not technically working, it's like, I need an answer first thing Monday morning so I can pull the trigger on something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will, you know, bug them on the weekend, unfortunately, just to make sure I've got that answer by Monday morning. I try not to as well, because I don't like to bug people when they're not, you know, when it's not a paid day. But in the short form world, sometimes you just have to do it.
One time I get mad at one of my coordinators for sending me emails over the weekend.
Did you?
I said, these can wait till Monday. Like, they're not urgent, important.
Yeah, I'll get them sometimes on the weekend, and if I don't feel like answering them, I just will flag them and go back to them on Monday. You know, if someone is asking me a bunch of questions, or I'll write back and be like, I'll answer this on Monday. But I guess I've sent so many over the weekend myself that I understand sometimes you're just like catching up on the weekend, right? Like mm-hmm. If you were so slammed on Friday, so Saturday morning, you're just taking a couple hours to sort of just get caught up and send out a few emails. So I try not to let myself get upset at people if they're bothering me on the weekend. But I also try not to look at my email too often on the weekend.
I can't do that. I'm like, I have problems.
Oh,
I look at my email like once an hour.
I try not to sometimes. And I've even set up my phone now where it won't ding when I get a new email. So if I'm out and about,
yeah.
I don't know if I get a new email unless I specifically check it.
Yeah.
And that's been it's so much better for me because I don't want to know every time I get an email. If I'm sitting in front of my computer, you know, I'm going to see it on the screen. And so that's fine. But if I'm out doing something, I'll check my email when I get a chance. I don't want to get a ding every time I get an email. So you might try that. Yeah.
Well, I think we're jumping around here. We're going back to the whole email thing, but the culture that we've created is one that you almost have to be available 24/7 sometimes in production, you know.
It's true. Yeah. Sometimes you do. And I do, like if I'm out on a tech scout,
yeah.
You know, usually right after the tech scout is over, I'll check my email, right? Because I probably haven't looked at it in an hour or two. So yeah, when I'm on a job, I try to, but on the weekends, if I'm not technically working or, you know, when I'm not on a job, I don't want to know every time I get an email. I'll check it when I have time. Otherwise, I'd just rather not know.
I don't think I've ever talked with anybody about emails before this for this long, but I think it's interesting, you know, because it informs, you know, the way we work.
Absolutely. You know? It is such a big part of the job that we do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so much of the job that I do is over email,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Can you imagine not having email? I mean,
I can't. I mean, I think back to, you know, the 50s when all they had was a telephone. They didn't even have faxes. Like it must have taken so much longer to get a production up and going because it was either the phone and cell phones didn't exist. So, you know, you called somebody's office and if they weren't there, you just had to wait for them to call you back.
I mean, we're really blessed to have this tool called email. Like it's just without it, I don't know how we would do our jobs.
It's made things so much easier. And I know it in certain ways that, like you said, it sort of makes us a slave to our computer or our devices because people do expect almost an instant answer if they send you an email. You know, mm-hmm. if you haven't responded in an hour, they wonder what's going on. But it does make things so much easier for production. I mm-hmm. cannot imagine ever having to do a production without it now. And I've done them, you know, but that was so long ago. I would never want to go back to that.
Right. So as we wrap this up, people that are out there in the interwebs listening to this, however they're listening, maybe they're thinking about getting into production if they're not already in production and they're thinking, hey, that job might be cool. I want to try doing what Matt's doing, you know, working in as a production manager or a line producer. Do you have any advice for them?
If they're not already in the business?
Yes. Or if they are, and because maybe they're wanting to move up and maybe they're a coordinator or somebody.
Well, I guess if you're not already in the business, my advice is, you know, you're going to have to start at the bottom. So you're going to have to start as a PA. And when you're starting out as a PA, probably the biggest piece of advice I can give is have a good attitude. as you know, sometimes PA work is not terribly glamorous. I mean, let's be honest, sometimes all of the work that all of us are doing on set is not terribly glamorous. But, you know, PAs are asked to do things like empty the trash or set up the tables and the chairs for lunch or, you know, lock up a door, meaning, you know, stand in front of a doorway and don't let anybody go in or out because you don't want them to mess up a take. And sometimes they can do that for hours. So it's not always the most fun job. You know, when I'm working on set with PAs, like if somebody has a bad attitude, I don't ever want to work with them again, you know. And this relationship is all about, I'm sorry, this business is right. all about relationships. Yeah. And, you know, as a PA, you want to get in with a coordinator or a production manager or a line producer that will then keep hiring you. So every time they get a new job, you'll get a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, the biggest piece of advice I can give is have a good attitude. Know that you're going to, the kind of stuff you're going to be doing might not be the most fun and the most challenging, but it's stuff that has to be done, and you're going to learn a lot by being on set. And from there, you'll figure out, you know, what you want to do. If you want to be a line producer or a production manager and you're already in the business, I guess... try to get a job as a coordinator, because a lot of times you become a production manager, especially in short form.
Mm-hmm.
You'll become a production manager after you've been a coordinator for a while. I know that in long form and, you know, movies and television, sometimes, you're an AD first and then you become a production manager. So if you're working in long form, maybe the AD route is the way to go. But for short form, for commercials and things like that, yeah, normally you're going to want to be, you know, first an office PA, then a coordinator, then a production manager, or sometimes they call it production supervisor, and then you'll become a producer or a line producer. That's kind of the known track. But, you know, I think there's all kinds of ways to do it, depending on who you know. You know, if you have a friend that runs a production company, then you're more blessed than a lot of people in the business, and take advantage of that any way you can.
Very cool. If somebody wanted to track you down, follow you, are you on social media at all? Or
I am. I don't do a lot of social media, yeah. I'll be honest, but I am trying to make myself do more now that I've launched True Budget.
Right.
So I have set up social media accounts for that. I probably should have written down what all of the handles are so I could have it in front of me. I know on Twitter.
Well, we can put those links on the podcast.
Okay.
So we can follow them.
Okay. I know on Twitter it's just at True Budget.
Okay.
And I am also on Twitter myself, although I rarely get on. I think I'm at Matt C. Producer, I think. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me there. Yeah, that's it. I don't do Instagram. I think I have an account, but I never go on. I'm not a big social media guy, but, I'm going to try to make myself, do it more often.
That will be your 2020 goal.
Exactly. Exactly. So if you have any ideas of things I can tweet or post about, feel free to reach out to me. Let me know.
And Matt loves emails, so you can send Matt an email.
You can actually, if you go to the True Budget site, there's an email link, and that comes directly to me. So yeah, if you want to send me an email, you can do that.
Matt, it was great talking with you. I'm excited to test out this True Budget app when I dive into a short form project. And I really enjoyed our email conversation, geeking out with you about that. And I wish you the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Go For Production. You can listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also listen online at assistantdirecting.com, where we have articles, links, and free downloads for people that work in production. When you visit the site, be sure to subscribe to our e-newsletter to stay connected with what we're doing.